if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 204. This is our 2022 Masters Tournament Research podcast. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this year's first major. Hello, gentlemen.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more info. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website with in-depth betting previews. My Masters betting preview will be out on Monday. Tournament strokes gained analysis. Paul's done an excellent piece that I think we're going to touch on today. Masters form statistics and our Masters predictor model. All of these features, like this podcast, are all completely free of charge with no paywall. Barry is on Twitter at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Again, that is likely to be out next Monday for the Masters. Please subscribe and like the shows if you're on YouTube. Now, I mentioned in the last podcast for the Valero Texas Open that we've got an open door. The best five-star review pre-Monday will be read out on the next Masters Tips podcast, the biggest podcast of the year. So it's open to all of you. I have noticed, Barry, that we haven't had a review from Ireland since March 2021. That's a poor show. So if you're in Ireland and you're a regular listener, it's a great opportunity, this, to actually be read out on the Masters podcast next week. Now, I have a great review here. Must read this. This has actually come in this week. It's from JBR1990. He is in the UK. That all becomes clear when I read this. It's entitled, Delivers on the Basic Principles of a Podcast. I have a unique set of barometers when judging a podcast, and chaps, you've scored really well. The biggest surprise is that most podcasts do not. I listen on the tube and commute from Maida Vale to Liverpool Street. As such, I'm usually surrounded by tourists carrying Harrods bags, drunk bankers, and girls and boys from Essex wearing too much makeup and perfume. My biggest gripe is when I slot in my noise-cancelling headphones as escapism, and my pod of choice is either A, too quiet, B, mostly loud enough, but one clown is sitting a metre from their microphone. So well done on speaking at a level that enables me to drown out the fashionistas, financiers and Instagrammers. You'd be surprised at how many don't. Golf chat isn't bad too. And that's from JBR1990. That's one of the best reviews I think we've ever had, chaps.
That's a cracker, isn't it? So let me get this straight. The golf chat's okay. No mention of the tips, which is probably not such a bad thing, really. Mm-hmm. But we've got the leveling, all right. Got the volume. Got the volume control just about sorted after all these years of trying. So
it's taken us around about 200 episodes, but the work that you've put in, the work that Barry's put in, has finally come to fruition. That's been confirmed. And believe me, when you're commuting through London, you do need a podcast. I mean, I've done it the same. You're going for, and you can't hear what's going on in your earphones. So we must be doing something right. Okay, let's crack on. The people want to go through our views, the research, what we look for as punters before we place our bets for the 2022 Masters. The best thing is we are recording this. I will date this. It's 10:30 UK time on Friday, the 1st of April. And hooray, we actually have some live Masters markets. Antipost is disappearing slowly but surely. So it's good. Right. I tell you the first thing I'm going to mention, and it's a detailed thing. I became aware of this yesterday. They've lengthened the course. 7,510 yards, par 72. It's a classical golf course. It's old style tree lined. And I always qualify it as a mid-score score metric. So something from potentially 12 up to 15, 16 under par tends to be the winning score. Just for reference, it was the seventh of 51 PGA Tour courses in terms of its difficulty in 2021, when clearly it didn't. There was a little bit of wind, I believe, on the Thursday, but it kind of sorted itself out. They were pretty typical conditions in the end. Right, let's actually detail these changes because they're quite interesting. 2022 sees significant changes to Augusta National, with two critical holes on the back nine being lengthened and remodeled. Let's start with the 11th, the White Dogwood hole. This is the one, if you remember, down the hill.
Yep.
Green is then set on the left-hand side with water very much in play.
Yep, yep.
They've added a new tee box. I remember hearing about this. It's basically they squeezed it right into the far corner on the boundary of the land. It's lengthened the hole by 15 yards, but more fascinatingly, it's also moved the tee box to the left as well. So the tee box is actually going to be facing a slightly different angle to the left of the tee box we're used to. The hole will also play differently on the basis that the tee box has been moved to the left and the fairway has been recontoured and widened by up to 15 yards. Now, I'm envisaging that tee shot, and you always get that huge bank of trees on the right-hand side.
Yep.
Well, lots of those have been totally removed. So a load of the trees on the right-hand side in the landing area have been moved.
It's going to visually look very different, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. They're going back to their heritage. This is how the hole used to play. In a detailed change, the first cut has also been removed on the right-hand side. So they're taking trees away. They're also taking the first cut away. So basically, that fairway is going to extend 15, 20 yards further to the right. It's been replaced by what they're classifying as fairway short grass. So effectively, it's the fairway ongoing. This is the best bit. Which encourages errant drives to fall foul of Augusta National's amazing topography and roll out into even more disadvantageous positions. And I put on my preview, think of it as DeChambeau proofing. This par 4 will now play at a whopping 520 yards, which is longer than the par 5 13th. Width, so I think what they're angles. Trying to do, and they're not only doing this first cut removal on the 11th, they'd also mentioned that they're doing it on the 9th, also on the 10th. They're basically taking away bailout areas where players knew that if they got the ball into that bailout area, the first cut would slow the ball down and then they knew where that ball would be for the second approach shot.
Yep.
They're now saying, no. What we're going to do is extend the fairway further so it's taking you more into trouble if you take the old traditional bailout position.
Yeah. Sorry, Barry, you were going to say something then.
They're just saying width and angles. You know, if you take the risk on early on in the hole, then you get rewarded with an easier second shot. But if you avoid the risk early in the hole, you get a more punishing second shot. Mm. It's
perfect. Perfect.
It's so good.
There.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, a lot of this is, you know, lifted from the fried egg and Andy Johnson and his, you know, his overviews. He just does such a great job. And explaining it and laying it out and making it very easy just to drop in your head and go, oh yeah, that makes so much sense. So I'd certainly encourage people to go have a look at the fried egg overview on it.
Yeah. Now, in my mind then, that turns that hole into another draw hole, because you're going to, if the tee box is over on the left and they've cleared some space over on the right, are you not going to want to play a high right to left shot on that hole?
I see. The thing with the angle of the green and the approach shot, you want to be a bit further right, because then
you're not having to come over.
You're not having to come over the water. So you have to almost challenge the tree situation, or the few, you know, little trees on the right that are there.
Yeah.
You to risk getting involved in them, but that gives you a better angle if you can pull it off. Whereas if you hit the big high draw and hit it down the left, then you're having to come across the water and you're probably just going to bail out to the right of the green on your approach shot.
Yeah.
So it's about when you want to take on the risk on that hole. So if you want to just bail out on the tee and just hit a safe one, then you're going to have a more difficult second shot and you're probably not going to go aiming at the center of the green. You're just going to flare it out to the right and then just try to get up and down. Mm. But if you hit a belter of a tee shot, then you've got a chance to really an attacking second shot at the green, at the pin.
It's interesting what Barry says, because from the visuals I've seen from above, they haven't removed all the trees, which is exactly what Barry's saying. They've left like a kind of island of trees. But what they've done is, if I'm from the tee, they've created more fairway the other side of those trees. So what could happen is that your ball could effectively end up still within those trees or to the right of those trees, and you've got a blocked second shot completely.
Right.
It's very clever. Mm. Very, very clever.
Well, 520 yards, it's going to be...
Well, you're using driver, so you can't even take length off the tee, can you?
It's a tough hole anyway, isn't it? There's going to be some scores there, isn't it? Interesting.
The pivotal par 5 15th Firethorn has also been lengthened by 20 yards, with that fairway also being recontoured. Usage of short grass replacing the first cut will also be used on other holes, including, this might not be all, it might be on other holes as well, but we'll find out, the 9th and the 10th, which are both par 4s. So we're now looking at a quoted 7,510-yard par 72, but as you know, and as many listeners will know, but if you're new to golf and you don't really know the detail around the Masters, Augusta National is also very unique in the way that it cuts its fairways, and rather than the cut is actually against the players. So what they're trying to do is get the balls to stop as quickly as possible in the fairways, which makes this course probably... I've always said it, I think it's like 7,800 yards in real terminology. I reckon this now, with these extensions, it's probably touching 7,900 yards, you know, in real yardage. Especially with all the topography, the uphills and downhills and whatever.
Yeah.
It's a long goal. It's longer than 7,500 yards.
Yeah. And if you add a little bit of moisture into the fairways as well, then that's going to make it play even longer, isn't it?
It's funny you should mention moisture. You know how anal I am, but that's why people love this podcast. It's why people love Golf Betting System, because we give detail. Here you go. Listen to this. Turf conditions is the second point I wanted to raise on this podcast. They have had 5.27 inches of rain in March in Augusta. That equates to 134 millimetres of rain for those of us on that kind of European setting. They had 21 millimetres of rain yesterday, Thursday. It was barren down all day, mate.
Mm.
This is the most that I have seen in my records, and they go back to 2014. And I know what listeners are thinking. They're probably, oh, yeah, but they've got the best sub air in the world. They'll suck the moisture out, this, that, and the other. Then I look at the forecast. And yes, it's a forecast and they change, but they don't tend to change drastically too much. If we look at next Tuesday and Wednesday tournament week, and don't forget, we also know with Augusta that they try and get that course as firm and as fast as they can the weekend prior to the Masters. So when they played the girls' event last year, that course was as firm and as fast as they possibly could have got that. And then they taper it off for practice. The thing I think they're going to struggle with this year is that course has been inundated with rain yesterday. And then, if you look at next Tuesday and Wednesday, there's an 80 to 90% chance of rain from 2 p.m. Tuesday afternoon, local time, to 2 a.m. Wednesday morning. So there's a 12-hour slot of precipitation that has a 80 to 90% chance of happening.
Yeah, yeah. And that close to the actual start of the event.
That's a deluge.
You know, they've got the sub air, and we know that, and they can control the greens really quite well. The fairways may be a slightly different kettle of fish, really. And we've seen it relatively soft on the fairways before, and it does make it play longer, doesn't it? Essentially, you've got a long, softish fairway going into still tough, hard, fast greens, and. Yeah, it creates quite a challenge, particularly if there's a bit of breeze about. It can be, you talked about it being a mid score, kind of 12, 13, 14 under type, kind of winning score. You add a few of those extra dimensions into it, and you quickly get into single figures.
I agree. It's kind of setting the scene. I think we're going to get a soft Masters. When I say soft, I mean turf conditions.
Yep,
and don't forget that. Oh yeah, well, they've got the greatest sub air in the world. It's all and I remember all this before the 2020 Masters they played in November, and that golf course was as soft as it ever wanted to be. You know, you sub air, isn't it? Those greens were receptive pretty much in that particular 2020 edition for the whole of the four days. And I know it was November and it was colder, but even so. It can't perform miracles. And if that course is getting deluged as of Wednesday early hours, they're going to have to do very well to get that as quick and as frisky as they want it to get.
Is that the last of the raining that's forecast on Wednesday? Was it?
Yeah, apparently, yeah. It actually looks pretty clean from that point on. So it will get up to speed probably over the, into Saturday. But I think those first 36 holes, I think turf conditions are going to be on the soft side.
Yeah. I personally, a firming golf course that gets to its kind of peak on Sunday is absolutely perfect in my view. Ends up a really exciting finish where the players really are having to battle to make that score. Could be a cracker.
I'm looking at a forecast here. Daniel Field Airport on Windfinder. Get it into your browser histories. Or your settings. We're a week away. But anyway, it looks pretty frisky in terms of wind. I'm seeing up to 20 mile an hour gusts Thursday, up to 15 mile an hour gusts Friday, 20 mile an hour on Saturday. And as we know, around Augusta National, setting that beautiful topography, different wind directions and winds gusting 20 causes mayhem.
Yep.
Especially on holes like number 12. Mm. So it looks a very fascinating forecast. Frisky with moderate winds and potentially soft conditions that are going to be firming up. I don't think this is going to be a 20 under par job. I think this is going to be a traditional mid-score 13s, 14s, something like that, potentially winning this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if the wind materialises, it might be down to 10 to 12. We shall see. But yeah, it doesn't tend to get away, does it? And they can control it, particularly if it is starting to get firmer and faster towards the weekend, then that should keep a lid on the scoring.
That's all I've got on the course. Anything that you two want to throw in for the listeners?
On the basis that it is quite soft now, should we maybe have a little look at the results of the year DJ won and the November one? Would that help guide things a little bit, or is that just an anomaly because it was a different type of year and the grass was kind of different? Because that's the most recent, really soft one.
Yeah,
we had.
Yeah. It's a tough one because, you know, it's almost one that you put to one side in terms, you know, it's almost got an asterisk against it because of its position and the mentality, I guess, because it's, you know, it was so far out of the norm in terms of its point in the calendar and point in the golfing calendar. Not
no
just
crowds.
The, yeah. Don't know.
Well, I've got 2017 and 2018 categorised, and 2019 as soft scoring conditions. So I'd need to go into more detail around what elements, was that a specific round or was it the whole tournament?
Yeah, I think...
I think 2020 was also weird because I still think there was far more Bermuda in those greens than bent grass. I think there was more of a Bermuda golf course in the end. But we won't go down that route. But I've got 17, 18 and 19 marked up as soft renewals in my notes. So course clearly wasn't firm and fiery.
No, we've had a similar conversation about the pre-event conditions and then a drying course a few times in these pre-pods in the past. So, yeah, I expect there were a few. Perhaps a little bit more research into that and then we can firm that up.
I'm just looking at a bit more detail. I'm actually signifying certain rounds as soft, the early rounds. In 2017, it was round one. Charlie Hoffman shot a 65 to lead.
Yep.
On 2018, it was actually the Saturday. There was a load of rain deposited overnight. McIlroy, Fowler and Rahm all shot 65s on the Saturday. And in 2019, I have the first 36 holes categorised as soft. And we had a tie for the lead going into Saturday of Brooks Koepka, Jason Day, Francesco Molinari, Adam Scott and Louis Oosthuizen. Tiger Woods was tucked in tie for sixth, one shot off. With Dustin Johnson, Xander Schauffele, and Justin Harding of all people. So there you go. There's a bit more wind. There's a bit more detail there. That's probably not a bad one to look at. 2019. I know that. Just from memory of Tiger winning, that had really firmed up beautifully by the finish.
Yeah.
That probably is the renewal. 2019. Interesting.
Yeah, it feels quite familiar, doesn't it, in terms of how it may well play out. Interesting.
Right, next point on my sheet here. Moving away from the course. Nobody outside of the top 29 in the world has won the Masters since Angel Cabrera in 2009. He was 69th in the world. So, I'm busily... because I'm not that organised, getting the official world golf rankings on my screen. And who's sitting in 29th spot?
Will Zalatoris.
Will Zalatoris at 29 in the rankings, for the world rankings. I don't know, chaps. Is that anything you hold any story? I mean, at the end of the day, you've got your best... you've got your best players in the world playing this in a short field, so the top 29 winning it isn't kind of that weird or wacky, is it?
No, it makes a lot of sense, really. And
it does, but trends change; they adapt a little bit. 29th might be out to 35th this year, just kind of dropping a random number in there that happens to be Shane Lowry's number, who I'm quite sweet on next week. But, these things adjust, a little bit over time. So they're great guidelines, but I try not to treat them as hard and fast rules.
Agreed.
Because you can really shoot yourself in the foot or miss out by one or two people. And I'm not saying you go sweeping up everybody and back everybody, but maybe don't get that big red marker out just because somebody's a couple of spots outside a historical trend.
Yeah, it's a dangerous game, isn't it?
Well, one you can't thing sleep I would at say, if you read.
Defending champions here have a nightmare of a record, so I'm going absolutely nowhere near Hideki Matsuyama. I mean, Dustin Johnson missed the cut last year. Tiger Woods, 38th. Patrick Reed, 36th. Sergio miscut, Danny Willett miscut. Jordan Spieth, the enigma that is Jordan, went second, first, second across 3 years here, 14, 15, 16. But in general, terrible record of defending champion. So I'm going nowhere near. He also, Valero yesterday, there's still rumours that he's got that neck injury.
Well, he pulled out of the Pro-Am, didn't he? And it's no smoke without fire, I don't think. I don't think he's 100%. And, you know, we've all been burnt a number of times with ignoring players who've got injuries and then come back and do something that you didn't expect. And I don't really want to mention Paul Casey on this podcast, but, having pulled out of the... didn't pull out in the end, did he? Having conceded all his matches at the match play, I expect he'll be given a massively wide berth at Augusta, and I expect we'll wake up on Thursday or Friday morning and he'll be sitting top of the leaderboard at a 6-under par or something.
He didn't pull out. He still got a helping of OWGR points and a 50,000 check.
Yeah. Tough gig.
But we won't go down that route. Before we start talking about players, so we've mentioned course, agronomy, we've mentioned the trend on the world rankings, the fact that it could be soft. I just want to mention bookmakers, because the reason we delayed this podcast is because effectively the anti-post markets were so poor. So it was difficult to talk about players and prices on the basis that the anti-post markets were abysmal in terms of value. Two things to point out though, must point them out on this podcast. Right, Boyle Sports, 11 places each way of 50 odds. They have gone live this morning, which is Friday morning over here in the UK and Ireland. So if you're in the UK and Ireland, you can get 11 places each way of 50 odds with Boyle Sports. That is available right now. We've been mentioning Boyle Sports on this podcast for months now. If you want the most additional each way places across the golfing calendar, they are the bookmaker. At Golf Betting System, we have new customer sign-up offers for both UK and Irish residents. So they're available at Golf Betting System. If you haven't got an active account, I would get one. The other one I need to point out as well, again, Bet365. They are dominating on price in golf at the moment. Valero Texas Open, they were the best price on, or joint best price on, 88% of the 144-man field. You have to say, that's pretty impressive. I think the number so far across 2022 is 87% of all players on the PGA Tour have been best price or joint best price with Bet365 at the when we're pulling this analysis together. For those of you wanting the best golf odds right now, and I doubt if this is going to change for the Masters, we recommend Bet365 if you are 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account. You can find details of their current bet £10, get £50 in free bets, new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer in this podcast description. So Boyle Sports, 11 places each way, and Bet365, amazing odds. They have traditionally, for the Masters, and we don't know this for sure for 2022, but Bet365 usually go to 8 places each way of 50 odds.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they maintain their price proposition, or price position rather, with some extended places. We won't find out until Monday, I guess, as to how they'll play it. But interesting to see. They tend to be a good blend, don't they? And you know, you talked about Boyle Sports, Paddy Power, and Betfair have both gone 10 places, a fifth of the odds this morning as well over here in the UK and Ireland.
It's that usual conversation, isn't it? Some people want most places, and other people will say, "I want the best price." Yeah. So it's up to you. Yeah. But I think with Bet365, you will get that blend, yeah. Potentially, you know, in all likelihood, 8 places each way, which is their traditional Masters stance. Mm. And we just know that they're, you know, this in 2022, their golf prices have been outstanding. Right, let's talk players. It's what people want to listen to. Barry said this off mic before we started. I've never seen a Masters board that is as blended at the top. There are 12 selections, 12 players sub 20 to 1.
Yeah.
Almost suggests that no one's got a clue who's going to win this.
Yeah. The bookies or the punters or everyone?
Well, certainly not.
Tight, isn't it?
Well, when you've got such a level playing field, I'm quoting here Bet365 prices because they are best in the market right now. 10 to 1 Rahm, 14 to 1 Thomas, 16 to 1 on, there's a list of them, Smith, Scheffler, Spieth, DJ, McIlroy and Morikawa, 18 to 1 Kepka, 20 to 1 Hovland, Xander has crept to 22 to 1 and Patrick Cantlay is a 20 to 1 chance. I don't remember 12 players in that kind of price.
No. You get a jump after that. Xander's back out to his absolutely bog standard 22.
You're right. You jump from 22s at Xander to 33s for the defending champion, Matsuyama, and DeChambeau, who's in awful, awful physical state.
The pricing is fascinating because the two golfers in that list that have stood, I'd say, head and shoulders above the rest this calendar year are Smith and Scheffler for me. And their prices are shorter than you would have, let's say, put down on paper a couple of months ago if you were to write your Masters prices. Mm. But everybody else has shown enough good stuff in their game to warrant this confusion amongst the bookies. And I'd say us as punters as well. Because with any of them now, you could absolutely make a great case for them. I'd say Hovland might be a little bit long for what he's shown in terms of form.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just so hard because you could pick an awful lot of good stuff from every one of their games to make a case to back them. And so it's going to be a head-scratching dilemma between now and Thursday.
There'll be some people sitting on some nice tickets for Scotty Scheffler. I had a look back through, and at the start of the year, he was generally 33 to 40 to 1 to win this. And, you know, what he's done over the last 6, 7, 8 weeks from going from a PGA Tour maiden to world number one has been incredible, isn't it? And his price is justified. I think you're right. You know, he's in that 16 to 1 bracket with some illustrious names there. You know, quite rightly, he's out there because he deserves to be in that spot. Cam Smith, as you said, Players' Champion. He's had a fantastic year. There's some real chances there by these players that you maybe wouldn't have ordinarily put into the list. Although Cam Smith's got a great record here at Augusta as well, hasn't he? So you can't really knock that.
Yeah, but he wouldn't have been hanging around the elite price level without the players. But so, you know, and deservedly there.
Yep. No, he'd have been down in that next tier, wouldn't he? He'd have been the 33 to 40s, that kind of number, I expect. But yeah, this, when you're looking at Hovland, and I must say, looking at statistics, Hovland was one of the names that jumped out to me for this. You know, and you go back a few weeks before all of the Scheffler, Cam Smith kind of noise, and Hovland was, you know, he was arguably the best player, or playing the best golf in the world at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's gone off the boil a little bit, but is that about, you know, keeping his powder dry, ready ahead of this week, and to have a real assault on winning this this major championship?
Yeah, off the boil, 33rd and 18th.
Yeah, exactly.
Before
that,
9th, 2nd, 4th, an anomaly miscut, 1st and 4th. So, yeah, I mean,
it's all relative, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Did you see the guy's strokes going tee to green numbers last time at the Valspar? I think he was 2nd for tee to green, something like that. It was madness, mate.
It hardly sniffed disaster, does it?
The only trouble with Hovland is, and you do look at the winners here, even Danny Willett had a top 10 at a major prior to winning this. I'm talking about winning. I'm not talking about, you know, I always say this, I'm not talking about each way placing or getting in the top 10 or top 5. I'm talking about winning. Danny Willett. So, you know, winners here. Matsuyama, he hadn't done so well in majors recently, but you go back to, say, 2017, 2018, he was getting close in majors.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you
so
just
Hovland
stretch,
would be pushing the boat out on that one. No major, I mean,
but not by much whatsoever.
Much.
Yeah, but look, come on, look, not by much. If you just like go back to what I was saying earlier, just stretch that a little bit. He's got 2/12 and a 13th. So, you know, if you don't put that red line through him for not getting the top 10, you can see three performances there that were pretty close. And his majors record, although, you know, he hasn't had that, let's say, top 10 or top 5, he has 32nd, 12th, 33rd, 13th, 21st, 30th, a withdrawal, and a 12th. So he's he's a majors machine, just hasn't won one yet.
Yeah, exactly. A couple of top 12.
I made a note at Bay Hill a few weeks ago when I had him, and he was leading after 36 holes, and that course was kind of soft. I think Augusta in soft conditions suits Hovland to the tee. Mm-hmm. As soon as that starts firming out and he starts missing greens, we've got problems. But that doesn't mean he can't contend or potentially win.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the weather is helping Hovland's chances a lot. That forecast and the fact that those turf conditions are going to be soft and they probably ideally want. Because that plays into his wheelhouse. What kind of player are you looking for? I mean, just from my background, I'm always looking for a player that can hit the ball a long way and has a particularly high ball flight. But does that kind of follow on where you are at in terms of a player that ultimately wins this?
I mean, right now, I'm just going to say jovial, bearded, and has an Irish passport.
That doesn't hit the gym regular.
No, I mean, he does some weightlifting, but it might be in a pint glass format. But like, you could just hit rerun on our previous Masters preview podcast. The ability to move the ball both ways helps a lot here. It's not all exclusively draw, but control of your ball flight, if you can get the ball up high for the approach shots, even better. Mm-hmm. Might not be as much of a factor if the course stays soft, particularly through the first two, maybe 3 days. You don't need that ultra high ball flight to help you out.
Yeah.
Somebody has that freedom in their game, in their swing, just kind of rolling confidence, that they trust what's coming out, they trust what the ball's going to do, and follow the picture of their shot. Because I think this is a course where you need to trust your game to the nth degree, because it can just put you you could be just put in the spin cycle very quickly by Augusta.
You can't, yeah. Someone raised this on Twitter this week to me as well. He said, Steve, can you help me out? Can you give me some statistics about, where do you need to be after 36 holes to win this? And the deepest in the field was Charles Schwartz, or 12th. You cannot chase around this golf course. It will eat you up. For every birdie you get, there'll be a bogey or two.
Yeah, but you see the times where people go in these charges on Friday or Saturday or Sunday, and they might get to like 15 or 16, and they could be like 6 or 7 under. You're like, oh my God, they're about to contend. And then it's like kablamo. They get vaporized and ejected.
Yeah. You got it.
And it happens so often. It's amazing.
Hmm. Well, that's the beauty of the course though, isn't it? Because that back nine from kind of 13 onwards gives you some real opportunities to get that birdie streak going. And
yeah.
You know, you birdie 13, you birdie 14, you birdie 15, you might throw an eagle in one of those, one of the par fives as well. Get some momentum, and, if you can manage your way through and pick up a birdie or two on the final few holes, then, you can finish 5 under through the final 7 holes, or 6 or 7 holes. It's possible. I've seen it done. It can make an incredible difference to the outcome of a round. So, yeah, one of the beauties of Augusta, in my view.
Have you ever been so excited? It's felt like about 3 years since the last major.
It does drag on from July onwards, doesn't it? Yeah, there's always some good golf in between times, but and again, I think that's part of the charm of the event. It's the anticipation of it, from kind of the autumn onwards, and it's coming in April, and you're just going to have to be patient and wait for the week to come round.
Two things I want to point out. Par fours tend to be the actual battle area. Everyone says, it's the par fives. It's actually playing the par fours in a decent total, because they will eat you up. And with all this work they're doing to the poor par fours, especially in the 11th, they're just going to become tougher and tougher and tougher. Four of the last five Master Champions, 2014 through 2018, all arrived here in the top 7 par 4 birdie or better conversion charts. The one I always like here is distance to apex, big, high ball flight. Yeah?
Yep.
No one's won this without a ranking in the top 70 since 2009, Angel Cabrera. So they've all been in the top 70. Distance to apex on the PGA Tour statistics arriving here.
Yeah.
Hideki squeezed in there at 68th last year. Do you want a list of players that aren't currently in the top 70? And there's some good names in here.
Yeah, go on then.
Ansa, Berger, Casey. He laughs.
That's a result, yeah.
Don't forget, this is winners. Before I get this, how can you say Paul Casey can't? I'm not saying contend. I'm talking about winners. Connors, Fitzpatrick, Billy Ho, Kevin Kisner, Kevin Na, Louis Oosthuizen, Seamus Power, Patrick Reed, Justin Rose. This might break a few hearts. Scotty Scheffler.
Mm.
Webb Simpson. This might break a few hearts. Cameron Smith. Jordan Spieth. That all outside in terms of high ball flight this season.
Yeah.
That also includes last season as well. I've taken the full season from last year and this season to date. None of them sit in the top 70.
Yes, if you've been as brutal as chopping anyone out of that criteria, then you do lose some big names there, don't you?
Shane's in there, Barry. Shane's there.
I know. I'm looking at it right now, Steve, and I'm just ignoring it. I've shut my ears to your like horrible comments. He's missing out by a couple of yards. So
no, Shane's in the top 70. He's fine because he was there. I think he was in there last year. He's fine. So don't worry about his
on the blended one. Okay. Okay.
Ball flight's
I'm looking at this year's on the PGA Tour site right now. Yeah. So just for season 2022. But the blend.
If you look at last year, he's in there.
Yeah. Okay. Phew.
Paul kindly provided me with all these statistics this year in a nice spreadsheet, so I didn't have to go through them all. But yes, he's there.
I think the par four birdie or better is an interesting angle because it is really quite. It has been really quite prescriptive of some of the winners, isn't it? So
yeah, apart from Matsuyama last year.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you are always going to get some oddities, aren't you? But I don't think that's a bad place to start either. I'll just read through the top 10 of that as they stand at the moment in terms of people who are actually in the field. Cameron Smith, Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, Justin Rose, Scotty Scheffler, Dustin Johnson, Cameron Young, Louis Oosthuizen, Xander Schauffele, Joachim Niemann, Victor, our man Victor, we were just talking about, sits just outside that top 10 of players in this field in terms of that par 4 birdie or better ranking. Of course, that's before the conclusion of the Valero Texas Open, so there will be a little bit of movement on the stats, but nothing massively significant, I guess.
I noticed in round one at the Valero yesterday a player that Barry and I are very, very keen on at majors at nice each way prices who hit lots of greens and was very good from tee to green yesterday.
Gunnam.
T2.
Oh, my God.
T2 Tony.
he looked a little better yesterday.
Yesterday. T2 green.
I saw him hit a few shots that they look to be good aggression and freedom in the swing. But let's see if one round doth a golfer make for a big test like next week.
Well, I did actually back someone yesterday on the strength for their outing, which was my first punt of the Masters this year. I don't know. I couldn't resist. Really, we've looked. We'll look through these stats that we've been working through, and we've published some of them on the site. So we were talking about the majors' performances earlier. If you pop along to the Golf Betting System site now, there's a list of all the players and their major championship performances back to 2016. So, just to qualify the numbers that Barry was reading through a few seconds ago, if you want to pore over the performances of those players. All the players in the field, then you can see what they were doing. But yeah, the player that caught my eye on some of the stats earlier in the week was Luke List. And then when I'm staring at a leaderboard and he's at the time, yesterday, kind of lunchtime over here, or yesterday afternoon, sitting at the top of the Valero leaderboard, that was too tempting for me. So I backed him on the exchange at a massive 420 yesterday. That's long gone. I mean, you're talking 125. You might get 150s next week from an each-way perspective, and Perhaps an exchange win-only bet is a bit fanciful for next week, but I couldn't resist that. Torrey Pines.
Gotta chase the dream.
Sorry, about that again.
So you have to chase the dream.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
It's just too tempting. I went on a little bit of a splurge on the exchange last night as well, just scooping up a few prices. Mm. Just, you know, I'll work out the bookies bets now over the maybe over the weekend and coming days as the markets kind of develop and get fleshed out and hopefully get a little bit competitive. I might hold back a little staking until, you know, maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, and see if the bookies start to really try sweep up the last set of bets.
I expect there to be some movement. I tell you what I liked about Luke List as well, and I won't bang on about him for too much longer, but Torrey Pines winner. If you look at some of the winners there, Bubba Watson, Phil Mickelson a couple of times at the Buick back in the day, wasn't it? Tiger Woods, how many wins has he got? Torrey Pines. I think that Torrey win for Luke List is a big pointer in the right direction for this. Right kind of
Luke
game
List
well.
Luke List is a dangerous player, isn't he? Because he's extremely long, high GIR when he's on it, and the guy can actually scramble.
He's got
a great around the green game, and clearly it's always the putter that's the problem. But tee to green, he's elite.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's rare to get bombers that have got elite short games, and he's got that.
Yeah. Well, when I pulled the trigger on him, I expected him to collapse completely yesterday, and then I saw him nail kind of a 40, 50 footer across the green, which made me feel a little bit better about the punt. So. Yeah, we'll see how long that goes before that crashes and burns next week. But we'll see.
Cool, and Barry, you need to tell us what your fanciful exchange bets were.
Okay.
You can't just say that and leave the listeners hanging.
Leave us hanging.
But how do I get everybody to listen to the show on Tuesday if I give away everything right now?
True.
Trying to do a little. No, let's. Okay.
Mention one or two.
Yeah. Who was your favourite punt from yesterday?
Mention the fruitiest.
the fruitiest. Well, okay. The one I put the most on was Shane. I've got the vibes I had for Gary Woodland when he won the US Open in Pebble with Shane this week. I could be completely wrong. It's more likely that I'm wrong than right, but I've just got that same kind of feeling. Gary Woodland, I couldn't resist, 150 on the exchange. I'm not sure if it's better or worse right now. I'm having a little scroll here. He's still the same, so that's okay. I'm happy with that. Max Homa, he's got two missed cuts around Augusta, but I think he's going to figure it out. He's too good to not figure it out. He's 190.
Yeah.
I can't ignore that. The guy is an elite player. He's won around Riviera. We all know the analogies we draw between the two courses. They have success at Riviera, you know, can bring you success at Augusta.
Yep.
He's 37th in the world, and you know, you can get him at 190 on the exchange. Just doesn't match up to me. They got it wrong. So. Those are three little ones. I have a couple of other weird ones, but I don't know. They're all more like emotional savers than anything else.
Paul, before we disappear, I want to highlight a resource that we've put on Golf Betting System that you have put a lot of effort into this week. And it's available free of charge. I know that's strange to a lot of listeners. Free of charge at Golf Betting System. No paywall. Can you take the listeners through this piece of analysis? We're calling it a kind of cheat sheet, aren't we? An Augusta cheat sheet for the Masters. I'll put a link to it in the description as well of this podcast.
Yeah, there's a lot of data on the site. We tend to pull out as many of the stops as we can with these major championships. And I guess, you know, alongside the standard current form and event form and the combined stats that pull those two together. For the majors, we put stats out such as the major championship performances, which I mentioned a second ago. That's all on the site at the moment. Current form, of course, is out there, excluding the Valero, rather, which is happening at the moment. But with the Masters, there isn't this wealth of strokes gained data history, is there? And, no. you know... you can infer a certain amount from looking at the stats that are available, but you can't go back and aggregate all of the strokes gained off the tee and approach and putting performances, because it's just simply not published. You know, you see snippets of it about on Twitter or social media, but it's snippets rather than anything of any real use. So we've taken the key factors that we know about Augusta, the fact that it's got bent grass greens, which we know about, of course. Steve talked about it being a classical style golf course, you know, this yeah. tree lined. Yeah, with, you know, dog legs and, your old style course, a par 72, of course, which we know it's a long course. Taking the scoring, likely scoring, that we should see the kind of the mid score 12 to maybe 14, 15 under, depending on the conditions, of course, as the potential winning score. And what we've done is gone back to the start of 2019 and aggregated all of the DP World Tour and all of the PG World Tour strokes gained data for all events that have got these different attributes. So all of the bent grass greened events, all of the classical style events, all of the par 72s, etc., and then ranked the current field for each of those stats and published it on the site. So if you want to know who the best performer has been across all of those style courses for bent grass, strokes gained putting, for instance, on the site, strokes gained total for long courses, etc., it's on the site. And a nice, yeah. simple, easy to use one pager. So yeah, have a look. See if it picks out any nuggets for you. I mean, the name that catches my eye quite instantly is Christian Bezuidenhout, who probably won't appear. If you're looking just at PGA Tour stats, you really won't stick out, I don't think, on a lot of the stats like this, because most of his good work has been done in the past on the DP World Tour. But by bringing all of the data together, we can get a view of that. And in terms of his putting performances, strokes gained putting on bent grass greens over the years, since the start of 2019, I rank him as the highest bent grass green putter in this field as it is right now, in terms of strokes gained putting. But he's also good on tree line style courses as well. And again, if you go back through his DP World Tour history, you can kind of see how that fits and how that falls out into the data as well. So yeah, hopefully there's some nuggets in there.
Paul raises a great point. This is the first event we've had in 2022 on bent grass greens. We've had the Bermuda over in Hawaii and in California. We had the POA events in California. We've had Bermuda all through the Florida Swing. We've had Bermuda also, of course, in the first couple of events in Texas. This is the first event we've seen with pure bent grass greens. Interestingly enough, top 10 strokes gained total in Paul's analysis on bent grass. Cantlay at 1, Rahm at 2, Christian Bezuidenhout at 3, JT 4, Xander 5, and T2 Tony Finau in 6th.
Oh, the case is building for him, Steve.
It is. Best player over that time period on classical golf courses? Rory McIlroy.
And that
it's well worth
sense,
looking at this data, guys. Just come. It's linked from the homepage at Golf Betting System. I will put a link in the description, but it's all free, and it's just you can rank it by whatever you want to rank it by. It's fantastic, and it just throws some interesting names out to look at. I think that's us, chaps. Yeah,
indeed. Yes, looking forward to the continued speculation over Mr. Woods over the weekend. See what actually happens in that respect, and. And of course,
a 50-1 chance, I believe.
It is, yeah. Oh, should he play, there'll be plenty of takers at that price, won't there?
Mm. He'll go off on about 28s at this stage.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. The sea of blue as he confirms his attendance. But he has played a practice round, hasn't he? So it's got the paparazzi stirring, that's for sure.
They asked Rory, didn't they? Oh, how did Tiger play? And he's hardly going to say he played like a bag of spanners, is he? Oh, he was awful. Shot 93. Apparently, he played very well.
Yeah. That was
the staple
response.
Right, Barry, Paul, thank you for your time. It's been immense. We will be back next Tuesday with the 2022 Masters Tips podcast. We will see you then. Cheerio.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system. It's the golf betting system podcast.